On background, we have a couple things before we get to the full agenda. I reconvened a meeting of industry officials to extend the video streaming agreement for another year, which we've done the last 2 years. That has not been consummated yet, for lack of a better word. But it's an important agreement to have, important for the fund, and important for racing industries statewide for NYRA to continue to be able to video stream their product. There is an expiration date on the last agreement of December 22nd, and we hope to have an agreement in place before then. Governor Cuomo, Senator Skelos, and Speaker Silver have announced the appointment of David Scorton to head the board of NYRA, and public members of the board putting in place a temporary publicly controlled board to transform management of the thoroughbred racing run by NYRA into a more responsive and accountable organization. The governor's appointees are David Scorton as the chairman of NYRA, he's the president of Cornell, Bobby Flay, Jane Rosenthal, Len Riggio, Anthony Bonomo, Vincent Tisi, Joseph Spinelli, and Robert Megna. Those are the governor's appointments. Senator Skelos' appointments are Michael Dubb and Ambassador Earl Mack. And the assembly appointees are Michael Del Judas and Rick Cotton. It was just announced that the Breeders have appointed Chester Broman. That will round out the board. And John Henriksen was appointed as special advisor to the board for Saratoga. NYRA will have five of their members continue as trustees as the new publicly controlled entity. Mr. Megna, who had been the chair of the FOB, will no longer serve on the FOB since he'll now be part of the franchise itself. The FOB is now being chaired by Rob Williams, who's the executive director of the Division of Lottery. That's news as we know it till now. You have in front of you the minutes of August 25th. A couple of changes that are housekeeping changes that we've noted. On page 2, the second paragraph, the line should be Finger Lakes Casino and Racetrack, not Finger Lakes Racing. On page 2, the fifth paragraph, line 6, it should be Proposals, not Proposal.
I'm sorry, could you yeah.
Page 2, fifth paragraph, should say Proposals. Yeah.
Proposals. Okay, got it.
And page 3, the second paragraph, line 6, the word should be has, should be had and not has. Any other comments, corrections, additions to the minutes? Can we have a... Yes,
I have one question. I wasn't at this meeting. I apologize for... awareness of things. Right above the paragraph you just spoke of, you're talking about on line, or page 3, paragraph 1. We talk about a disqualification rule is ready for final approval by the board. Can I get some clarification on what that is?
That's the rule that people who abuse horses can't get awards, and that if they're accused of animal abuse, the funds are withheld in the case until the case is adjudicated.
Have we ever decided what we're doing with those funds?
Yes, we reverse them. You know, once it's been decided, it's a reversed expense.
So the fund, any earned money,
yes,
goes back into the fund.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It was a final. What happened was it went through a rulemaking process. So that's why all of a sudden it appears here. It was a proposed rule, then it was put into the record, and you know, public comments were solicited, and no public comments were received, and now became a final rule. It's the same rule that you saw like a year ago.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Toski's opinion to us was that it not only can be reversed, but it should be reversed.
Mm-hmm. Any other additions, corrections, comments? We'll accept a motion to approve the minutes of August 25th. Don't all jump up at once now. Mr. McMahon, motion, second by Mr. Graziano. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Next item is the financials. Tracy Egan.
Once again, Jean Coots was in India with her husband visiting family members. And she was gone for 2 weeks, and when she came back on Tuesday, I said, guess what? The board meeting has been moved to November. Hey, new financials. So thank you for digging in and getting this done. To get you up to date on how much better the accounting process is going, we're now able to close the month earlier to provide more timely financial reporting. This allows the board to review October instead of just September financial statements today. Comparative profit and loss and balance sheets, as well as a budget to actual comparison, are presented to give the board a broader context to review the fund's finances. As far as revenue goes, these documents show that October year-to-date revenue is $372,000 below budget, which is 3% below what we had projected for the budget. And that's primarily due to lower than expected NIBRA VLT revenue. Compared to last year, breakage is down 5.4% and handle is down 3.7%, which both are offset by the anticipated increase in VLT revenue. On the expenses front, October year-to-date promotional and administrative expenses are at 4.3% and 3.7% respectively of revenue. So we're under the caps, well under the caps of 6% for promotion and 5% for administrative. As of September 2012, if year-to-date registry and advertising fees are reclassified as revenue, which is part of the old argument that's been going back and forth with the OSC, administrative expenses would be 4.4% of revenue compared to the 5% cap. So we would be under the cap if we did that. And by the way, if you decide that we need to do that this year, then Toski has to go back and redo 2011, because it's got to be, they have to do a two-year comparison, apples to apples. And if you go back, I already had Toski do this, go back and look at 2011 and 2010. And if you do put the registry fees and ad income above the line, in both years, we would have exceeded the 5% cap. Excuse me. The financials show an accrued purse enrichment expense for NIRA and Finger Lakes Casino and Racetrack of $1,597,223,000. Let's say it again, about $1.6 million. However, $1.8 million of the $1.9 million that was authorized has been paid to facilitate purse payments. In other words, they still had racing, you know, for October, November, and into December, and they needed the money. So we've paid it out. So it looks like an extra drain on purse enrichment. But if you cut it, if you looked at it and you divided it up among 12 months, we would be fine as far as purse enrichment. And we also held back 5% for the year, just in case we finish the year and we're down a little bit. So, you know, if we're down 2%, 3%, there's a little cushion there. So that's the holdback. And when we get the audited financial statements from Toski, we will, you know, provide them with the rest of the purse enrichment, as much as we can afford without going over. Balance sheet. Negative amounts in the cash accounts represent checks that are outstanding and have not yet cleared the bank, now that all but the main disbursement account are maintained at zero balance. A quarterly accounts receivable aging was prepared as of September 30th. That's the last pages in the September financial package. And please note that 68% of receivables are less than 30 days old. All entities are paying within the quarterly window allowed by statute, with the exception of Monticello, which was brought current in October. As of October 31st, the fund has recorded receivables due to the Suffolk bankruptcy of about $130,000. Suffolk actually reports a little bit more than that. The award reserve 210 account balance of $7,682, remember that's down, at one point it was well over $200,000, represents awards to just two entities that are currently being withheld. This compares favorably to a balance of $216,000 as of December 31, 2011. This reduction represents a concerted effort to resolve legal matters holding up award payments on a timely basis. And if you have questions about any of these? What page are you looking at?
I was just looking at the balance sheet, and this is just for curiosity's sake. The 10% withholding that we're doing on all the awards, is that total 1.1 million? Is that what that is?
Yes.
Any other questions? Nothing else on the financials? Again, we apologize for being, not being in front of you earlier, but we did change the date of the meeting to accommodate board members, and the result was we didn't get them done quite as early as we would have.
Thank you.
Hearing none, we need a motion to accept the financials for September year-to-date and October. Mr. Snyder is our second. Dr. Wilmot, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item is approved. Next item would be the web and registry fees, and the item is in conjunction with the audit that was released by the Comptroller's Office earlier this month. I'm going to ask Tracy to kind of walk us through what we will have to do probably with web and registry fees.
Oh. Brian said you were going to give a speech about web and registry fees.
Okay.
You know, within the office, I think Gene Kutz did an excellent argument in conjunction with Kyle going to the latest accounting standards. The generally accepted accounting principles get updated from time to time, and so she checked with them, and when she wrote her argument in defense of the web and registry fees, I think she did an excellent job. And it's, yeah, you know, a matter of opinion. I actually spoke with Frank Patone yesterday, and she liked the intellectual exercise for sure. And Christine's opinion is, well, you can afford it now to put the fees above, and you can, you know, kind of put an end to 10 years or more of haggling. But it's a board decision. You know, I saw two opinions that I respect, but it's up to the board whether you want to, you know, continue to disagree, basically, with the Office of the State Comptroller.
And frankly, with the auditors from my office as well.
I'm sorry, what did your office say?
We agree with the Comptroller's office that they are revenue, or should be counted as such.
Right, and for the public listening in, but when I'm talking about putting it above the line, it means it's put above the line accounting-wise in that it's treated like a regular revenue stream, such that money that comes in from registry fees or ads, which is ads are relatively minuscule, that they're treated like revenue, such that, you know, 87% goes to awards and 2% of that goes to Cornell, et cetera. Because the ads are not such a big, you know, very big income for people, but they are a really good place for breeders or New York trainers to place an ad to reach. It's inexpensive, and they reach a very focused, very small targeted crowd, which is other breeders in the state, people looking to bring a horse or to advertise their stallion in New York State, people who want to lure mares to their farms. For example, some of the farms that will place ads will only do it springtime, because that's when the time when they're going to get mares in. So I look at that really as more of a service to people to have those web ads available at a relatively low price.
That total dollar amount looks like it's roughly $13,000 for the year so far, right?
Right.
And then the registry dollar amount looks like it's $135,000.
Yeah, and of course that goes up because everyone wants to wait till the last minute. We get flooded in December. The December 31 deadline, you know, is a real date where people don't want to have to pay more to register the horse, so they rush and get it in. And the reason to collect fees is, for one thing, you know, if you can't afford to pay the jockey club fee and the New York registration fee, you probably don't have enough money that you should be taking care of a horse. And this is just my opinion. It's So at any rate, it, by encouraged by the fact that the registry fee goes up after December 31st to a higher level, people say, well, I better get it done now before the fee goes up. They want to save money. And that gives us our truest reading of how many foals are on the ground that are aiming to be racehorses. Because some people may have a foal and they realize, oh, it's not going to be commercial. I'll find a market for it in the hunter jumper field or something like that. But it gives us, in addition to the number of foals that have been dropped in New York State, it gives us a really good picture on horses that are being directed in the path towards the starting gate, which of course is the end goal, to help the state make money through handle. Anybody else want to? Yes. This is Ed Kelly speaking.
Is it possible that we get the financial report prior to the meetings?
Yes. So what happened this time was Jean was away. We said we'll do it when she got back from India, and she didn't get back until Tuesday.
And we front-loaded the meeting to accommodate schedules of the board members. This meeting was originally scheduled for
December
13th. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I apologize, and yes, that's a very reasonable request.
I have a question. So what we do today is kind of binding moving forward. I mean, I think that it's an easy decision based on our revenue today, but, you know, my, you know, the web stuff should certainly be above the line. How, when we bill the fees for the registry, are we billing them as administrative fees? If we are, then I mean, I guess it's below the line. If we're not, and saying it's something else, what are we calling it when we bill it?
Well, we don't send out invoices for it.
Well, what is it on the
but
on the
it's isn't it? We can okay. At the beginning of the year, Mike DeMarco was considering registry fees 70-30, 70% administrative, 30% promo. Christine looked at that, and so she followed his lead for a few months, and then she looked at it again, said she didn't think that was proper. So she, for the whole year, we're going back and making the administrative fee or the registry fees 100% administrative, which I believe is the proper thing to do.
I think a lot of it has to do with what you put on your form and what you're calling it. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter today, but down the road, if that money starts to dry up, it could.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the reasoning, if you go back in history and look at the reasoning, why it was done that way, it was to alleviate burden. I'm speaking on behalf of the fund,
this is
CFO
Jeff Nizzo
from
speaking.
A while ago. The way that was always explained to the board was that it was alleviating the cap pressure on the administrative budget.
Mm-hmm.
And you're utilizing administrative tasks and work to collect those fees. Because without a registrar, you couldn't have a registry. And that was the whole philosophy, I think, that Mr. McCabe did way back when. At least it was explained to me since 5 years I've been here. But
it's always been an issue. You know, how do we...
It's been in past controllers' audits.
Because we have to stay within our
right.
Our parameters of the law.
Right.
And at different times, we have adjusted it to be one way or the other so that we can make everything work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's... We don't have that issue right now, so we can call it 100% administrative.
Mm-hmm.
But in years past, all that 30 years ago, it was always called promotional. And that budget was kind of separate, wasn't it, Harry?
Yeah.
So we did move it towards administrative, and you know, this is a good thing to move it all over there because that's where it belonged all along, but we couldn't do it because
mm-hmm.
we didn't have enough money, plain and simple.
Yeah. But the point of what is being talked about is actually removing it from an expense line and making it an income line.
Right.
So it doesn't offset that.
Right. And the financial situation is better with the Aqueduct VLT money coming in so that, you know, the cap goes up as, you know, as a aggregate number as the income goes in. Look, I mean, we don't have to do anything today, but certainly it is a... the more money that goes out the door to the breeding industry is the goal here.
What does, probably a stupid question, but what does the Harness Fund do in this circumstance?
Well, Mike Mullaney.
Mike Mullaney, our new executive director of the Harness Fund, is here. And their accounting situation is a little different.
We are working our way through it. It's a very difficult process right now. We can't thank you enough for postponing our board meeting. But we're just trying to sort out the numbers as we find them, pay the truth, record keeping wasn't that strong prior.
I'm sorry, what wasn't that strong?
Work our way through the record keeping.
There is no cap at their fund either.
But they do collect registry fees.
Yeah.
Yes, and ads.
And how much is that? I mean, where does the $75 come from? Seems like kind of an arbitrary number, too.
Well, I believe it was set by the board at some point.
Right, before I was here.
And that number had moved from time to time.
Right.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Dr. Wilmot?
Putting past precedent aside for a moment, and just looking, a fresh look at revenue and how to characterize it as income or offsetting expense. In the spirit and not the letter of the law, if the fund, which is a corporation, makes money through services of registration and through advertising, it seems to me it should just be called income. Now, that's just real world 101. As far as what the bylaws say and past precedent and all that, and trying to take a position so we don't screw something up, I understand all that. But so why wouldn't we just look at it that way now? Let's just make it a fresh start.
When you say income, you mean, you're saying you would just as well see it looked at as revenue?
Yes, correct.
As if it, even though it wasn't statutorily described.
Right.
Because, of course, and when they wrote the law, they couldn't have dreamed the internet was going to be invented, so there would be that possibility, nor did they know that GASB set-asides would be imposed, which take a huge chunk of money from the fund.
Right, well, I understand. Things have changed and you're held to old standards, and so that's why you gotta wiggle around trying to make these things work. If you look at the Jockey Club for a minute, the Jockey Club is the keeper of the registry, and they get paid to do that by the breeders. And we get paid to protect the integrity of the registry as, you know, the official holder of all the full certificates. Now, if we didn't want to show the revenue, then I suppose we could contract it out to the breeders and let them do the registry. I mean, at some point, it just sort of gets silly, in my opinion. To me, I see us like the Jockey Club, and we should, no matter what the rules say or what past history is, the reality of it is that we have a charge and we have to defend it. And that's my two cents. And I know Kyle will certainly clarify it and explain any holes in my logic.
No, the only thing I would say on that is that I think it is revenue. By the way, I'm not an accountant, so if I'm misstating the words, forgive me, but I believe it is. It's money in the door. It's revenue. But the question, that's not the question. The question, I think, is it revenue that is subject to the caps? Okay. And my view is it's not. Because it's not revenue that's contemplated or mandated by the statute. And that's what the statute says. And so it is revenue into the fund. I just don't think it's revenue that has to be earmarked or subject to the statutory caps that are mandated by law for all other forms of revenue that come into the fund. But it may be that legal argument was, I believe it was a solid argument, and that was the argument that we always advanced. It may be that argument is not necessary in light of everything that's changed with this fund and the alleviated pressure on the budget.
Is there a need for this board to act the set policy, or if you just do that, my recommendation, what I would propose is do whatever accounting you need to do from an administrative point, but if one board doesn't need to act,
you know,
I don't want to be on record.
You know, it's an accounting practice, and you know, the controller's audit has an opinion, my audit division has an opinion, we haven't necessarily agreed. You know, our opinion and the controller's opinion is get the most money out the door. That's what the fund's all about. But I understand that there are pressures administratively on our budget.
I got a question. It is, could we do the, you know, now that we know for this year anyway, and probably next year we have enough money, could we go to, you know, putting the money above the line, in the meantime, seek out, you know, the very highest opinion, the highest judge about whether it's right or wrong? You know, I don't...
Well, you got the state controller, I don't know much how you're going to go.
Probably top of the pyramid there.
Well...
Again, he's not saying you're breaking the law, he's saying that the goal is to get the most money out, and that, in fact, since we have more money coming in than before, that there's less pressure. But look, I mean, there
was... He also says, and I think the board needs to know this, that even though we had, you know, he says, well, this much money should have been, you know, in the revenue stream, et cetera, there's like no punishment for the fact that
right.
it was done in the past.
Right.
There's no penalty. So, you know, I guess it's you decide whether to, you want to continue the 10-year argument, or now that my staff says we do have enough money, so that we would be below the cap. You know, it would help to know if down the line we're still going to have the 5% cap, because it extends now to October 28th, 2013. Right?
Yeah.
2 years,
yeah. So, I mean, the answer, the short answer is you don't have to do anything. But you should know the issue is out there.
Perhaps this is not the appropriate time, but we, as a group, know that there are certain merger things happening or about to happen. And I'm just wondering if this issue, if anybody had any thoughts on how this issue might impact this group or whatever's left of this group going forward.
Well, certainly under the new racing promotional arm of the Gaming Commission, they will have a say in the management, although again, the management will be consistent with what we have, I believe. But I think that the policies will be affected both by the board and by the Gaming Commission and necessarily by the governor's office. So yes, the answer is that there will be changes. Will there be radical changes? No.
While we're on the financial matters, we don't have anything in writing yet from NYRA. However, I had a conversation and many follow-up conversations with someone in the accounting department at NYRA. And the proration that was started this year in June, because I believe Racing and Wagering Board is the one that instituted it, they went back and looked at whether revenues were being properly paid, and NYRA was overpaying us for Bridge Single and Signal 1, which has to do with something called Zone 2 into Zone 1. No one has yet been able to tell me.
It's upstate and downstate.
Oh, okay. Where's the upstate drawn line? The Bronx?
Yes. So it is for me. That's just me.
At any rate, so since then, the revenue from NYRA is sometimes down maybe $13,000 a month, sometimes $18,000 a month because of that change. But also, one of the people down there let me know that the board at some point would have to take a look at whether they were going to make us pay back. He said there's a statute of limitations of what you would have to pay back. It would be no more than $1 million, but possibly up to $1 million. And so in order to decide whether that's a contingent liability we have to put on our books, we have to know that it is, that it's the liability is there, and that it's likely to be imposed on us. And it's hard to make the call at this time because NYRA is having a board meeting, its first board meeting in December. And whether they even take this up, I don't know. But at some point, yeah, they've got other fish to fry, but at some point, hopefully not this year, but maybe next year. And I told Harry about this, Kyle about this, and Kyle's, well, I don't want to speak for Kyle, what's your opinion on whether we would ever actually have to pay that back going back?
Well, I mean, I'd have to study it a little more in terms of understanding how long this overpayment allegedly occurred, what the statute of limitations issue is, and how solid their argument is. But, you know, it seems to me that we're a conduit entity. When we take money in, we pay money out. We take money in, we pay money out, and we clear it out by the end of the year.
And so to, and by the way, this was not a mistake made by the fund.
That's made by NIRA.
And so to punish or penalize the fund or, you know, by extension, the breeders in subsequent years for a mistake that NIRA had made in prior years,
right.
I don't see that as necessarily a viable cause of action against this type of an entity.
Right, and where do we go to get the money back? Do we go to breeders and say, you owe us $25 from 2006? Right. I mean, it's, and look, as a matter of, and this is a matter of opinion, with the new NIRA board being a majority public, obviously there's some leverage that this board has with the NIRA board. So I don't see this as a major, you know, bill coming due tomorrow. But that, I agree with Kyle's assertion that it's, you know, we're just a conduit. So it's not like we made a mistake. We did what state law requires us to do. And it's NIRA's claim that they overpaid, and you know, we'll figure that out as we go along. Okay.
Should they offer the deed or come back to say, I'll come in and check to see if we were overpaying or not? Your accountant should have picked that up.
Right.
Is that always responsible?
Yeah, I think that would require the accountant to have a full knowledge of the arcane racing law to understand how all of those streams of payments work. I don't think that's realistic.
We, some folks in the room from my staff have been tasked with, these are some questions that NIRA staff has raised about a lot of different funding streams and payment streams. It's, as someone said yesterday, like dealing with Rubik's Cube to try and figure it all out. So we're in the middle of trying to analyze this too, because it's pretty complicated. Not just this issue, but other similar issues that the new, that some of the NIRA staff are now raising, that some of which are years in the making.
It seems that we've never invoiced NYRA for amount of money every month. We don't send them an invoice to say this is what you owe us.
Right.
So I don't see how we could be held responsible for money they overpaid, because we've never asked for it.
Right.
In the first place, we take whatever comes along, and that's, we trust that their accounting is right. And there's other agencies that are looking at it to see that it is right.
Right.
I don't see how to fund whatever have liability.
How, I agree with you.
And the chairman's absolutely right. I mean, we're a money in, money out thing, and we can't even hold money over from one year to the next,
right,
to take care of our
statutorily
own problems. How are we supposed to come up with $1 million to take care of something that happens 5 years
ago? Right. So
it just doesn't seem to me like
anyway,
we never hold water.
I think we should move on then with the agenda, because we've got a lot of other stuff. Suffolk OTB, which, as you all know, is in bankruptcy, and I'll ask Tracy to give us an update as to where we are with them.
Well, proof of claims have to be filed by January 25th, but because they've been keeping track of what they owe us, they actually think that they owe us $300 more than what we think. I spoke to the attorney, Chris Graham, yesterday, who's representing Suffolk OTB in the bankruptcy, and he said, because you're already on the books, you're already, you know, we don't have to file a proof of claim because they're already filing it for us. And they'll go over the numbers if there's a discrepancy between what we think and they think. They'll get in touch and say, we're going to change the amount from, I think right now they say, I think it's $130,272, something like that. And so they'll review it again and make sure. And they also have some money for the harness fund that they've already have moved forward with. So
that was the money that they owed the fund at the time they filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, they kept track of it in two different ways. There was $74,000 that they had withheld before their first attempt to file bankruptcy. And remember, Twin Spires, Churchill Downs sued to stop that and said you needed to have the Nassau or Suffolk County Board of Directors of the county
legislature.
County legislature, yeah, approve it, and they hadn't. So that had stalled that bankruptcy proceeding. Then they had to file again. They got permission from their county, and then they were successful in filing for bankruptcy. So we've moved way further in the process.
You have anything else in this column?
No.
And Suffolk is now Mr. Sekelig is working on this now. Suffolk is now trying to, based on what they feel, I guess, is a part of bankruptcy law, that the conditions that the Racing and Wagering Board put on their accepting out-of-state signals shouldn't be recognized. I stopped them from taking out-of-state signals unless they agreed to pay New York entities, including this fund, first, because the out-of-state folks will cut off the signal if they don't pay them right away. So it's, you know, cash and carry. New York tracks won't do that, and because of that, you know, they'll suffer. They're trying to get out of that. This is the same provision we put in for New York City OTB. And, you know, we're arguing that out now. Is there anything you want to add, Bill, on that?
Well, I had correspondence with Chris Graham, the administrator on the issue. And I'm at the point where I'm in front of him with the protocols that were set up for this, for how the deposits were made into a special segregated account to cover these amounts. They made the deposits into that segregated account. And so the issue really is whether or not that segregated account would be treated as a trust fund and therefore passed outside of bankruptcy, or whether it's just going to go into the general bankruptcy estate.
And it was certainly my goal to have it so the New York entities would remain whole, because what we've tried to do in the years I've had the position of Racing and Wagering is to, you know, have New York take care of New York, and instead of having us, you know, entities within the industry sort of backdoor New York and other New York entities to gain profit. Just, you know, trying to look at this holistically, and I think the Governor Cuomo embraces the idea that this is an industry that helps New York. But that, you know, these sort of any side deal that kind of cuts out New York doesn't help. And that doesn't help from, you know, the feed seller all the way to the guy punching tickets at the NOTB in Suffolk County. It doesn't help anybody. So anyway, any comment or discussion on this? Just some sort of an informational item. Otherwise, we'll move on to the next item, which is the our contract with New York Thoroughbred Breeders and a legislative update. Jeff Canizzo has three issues to present before the board. An update on promotions, legislative affairs, including our friend Mr. Joe Judas, who's here, and the contract. So I'll ask Jeff to, and by the way, as I said at the last meeting, the legislative program that the breeders put forward this year was quite successful. In a year that not a lot of bills got passed, you did a crackerjack job. So,
thank
Jeff?
You. Thank you. I have a four-page report here that everyone should have. And this covers August through this past month of October. So many of these items in the last few months. But we also have a copy of our New York Breeder magazine, which is from November. I'm going to talk about here quickly. But the New York Breeder magazine, as you can see, has been very much retooled and improved, all the way from the paper that's being used to the material inside of it, and most importantly, the distribution of it. This issue you're looking at actually went to 22,000 homes. It's the largest distribution the New York Breeders ever had on record. That's every single subscriber of the Blood Horse in every single state of the United States, except for Alaska. But the point is, it's gone, come a long ways, and it's turned into a real promotional tool for the fund and the breeding program. And that's what you're looking at will be made forward in 2013 as well. We continued with our electronic newsletters that I'm sure everyone receives on Fridays from us. That list grows every single month. We're at 4,800 recipients of the email that we do talking about the latest communications for breeders. We've continued our advertising
print and online advertising for the fund according to the contract. You can see what was done through, from August through November. In the Blood Horse, Pollock Report Online, NYRA with TOBA, and with the TDN, the daily publication. We've worked with our, under our website agreement with a contract on nytbreeders.org, where we've written 92 original pieces about New York Red and the performances in the breeding industry, along with sales from those 3 months that we're talking about. There's over 500 video replays and 500 winning photos for every horse that's won in New York State. We had our cocktail party way back in August. The sales ground at Facebook Tipton. We had an annual meeting the same month of August as well at Facebook Tipton. We conducted a new owner seminar with TOBA back in August as well at Facebook Tipton with the Thoroughbred Owner and Breeders Association. We had another new owner's luncheon we worked with NYRA on. That was held in August as well. So the month of August, there's quite a bit going on, as you can see. We were involved with the Saratoga Racing Gaming Institute presenting, talking about the breeding industry and the legislation that we've moved forward. In October, we had our showcase day event at Belmont Park, where we took a bus full of people, as we usually do down to Belmont, and had a day at the races. And then the last two items on here are quite important. And what I'm going to do is have my office actually mail everyone a formal copy of the economic impact study that we completed, and a DVD of a video production that we did discussing the overall thoroughbred breeding and racing industry, well, the whole equine industry here to New York State. But if you remember, the Thoroughbred breeders, along with all the other owners and breeders associations in New York State, both on the harness side and our side of the business, got together and we commissioned a economic impact study for this year on how important the equine industry is to the state. That was released in October. Coupled with that was an actual DVD that we produced that described all of the people that are a part of this industry and then the jobs involved with it. That study revealed significant numbers here for the state, and I highlighted a few of them here. There was a $4.2 billion effect on the state's economy from the equine industry. There's 33,000 full-time positions, and the equine industry generates about $187 million in annual taxes. There's 1.3 million acres of open space occupied by horses here in the state. And there's about 157,000 horses. So two other really key points out of that study that are important, specifically the thoroughbred industry, is that for every 100 race horses here in the state, it equates to 80 positions, 80 jobs. And each horse itself generates about $92,000 of economic activity from racing. So the point of it all is that the equine industry is extremely important to the state. We submitted all of this work to over 300 people in Albany, which is all the legislature and their staffs. Got a personalized copy of all of this. We did some various other press releases and PR work, and it's become very public and it's been accepted, what I believe is extremely well. So I wanted to point that out, and I'll get your addresses from Tracy, and I'll mail you a copy of the study and the DVD if you haven't seen it. That's the promotional report for the last 3 months. Chris, do you want to talk maybe a little bit about the legislature and give an update?
As the chairman said, there weren't a lot of racing bills that were passed this past session.
Excuse me, Chris, would you mind standing? I want to make sure that people listen in, they can hear. Thank you.
We were successful in getting two of our four priority bills passed and signed into law this year. And they were the one-year extender on our fund cap bill that increased the fund percentages And then the other bill was the definition of New York Stallion, changing the definition to 1 year from 2 years. There are two bills of note that the fund should be aware of that haven't been delivered to the governor yet in the recent history. And one is the bill that would extend Catskill OTB's region to take over New York City OTB's territory. That has not yet been delivered to the governor. The other bill is the New York City OTB's workers' healthcare benefits bill that would reimburse the city of New York for the healthcare benefits for the retirees of the New York City OTB workers. It's usually not a good sign if bills haven't been delivered at this late juncture in the year. So it's more likely that these bills probably would get vetoed. But they still have not yet been delivered to the governor. You know, they passed both houses of the legislature. As you know, last year the legislature gave first passage to the constitutional amendment for casino gaming. Second passage is needed and could occur in 2013, or they could wait and do it in 2014. The amendment only authorizes 7 casinos throughout the state, doesn't say where they are, so that's going to be an issue that the legislature and the governor are going to try to work on and try to find out where those facilities are placed. Ensuring that the breeding fund gets a percentage of any expanded gaming revenue is going to be something that we're going to be prioritizing for the next session. And in terms of our legislative agenda for next session, we're still formulating ideas for legislation. We welcome any suggestions from the fund board. Possible items could include another 1 year extension of the fund caps bill. We may need to modify it if we need to. Pushing again the personal management bill that would allow for the breeding fund to have greater discretion in how to allocate its resources. That bill did pass the assembly on the last day of session, almost passed the Senate, but basically we ran out of time. So there's a good chance we can get that bill next year. And then the other bill that we would push next session would be allowing the fund to carry over a balance if we want to, depending on that. That's what we want us to do. The only downside to that is that they see a balance there, so maybe they want to try to sweep the money. So, but we welcome any suggestions you guys have on the conversation.
Questions for Chris? Comments? Yes, Dr. Wilmot.
I just wanted to echo your words and commend Chris and Jeff for the legislation they got through, particularly the Stallion one. As Joe, I'm sure, would agree, reducing the length of time a stallion has to be in the state if he's owned by out-of-state entities from 2 years to 1 year was a really huge step for equine commerce in this state. And as a breeder, I just think it's great. I received a letter quoting that legislation from the head of one of the higher-ups at Darley, Charlie Bowden, Darley being Sheikh Mohammed's company. And they said because of that new law, they've decided to send Desert Party to New York because he only has to stay for 1 year. He's a very nice young stallion. So, and as Joe, I'm sure, knows better than me even, there's probably 5 or 10 really nice new horses coming to the state, and I'm not sure they would have been coming if that hadn't been passed. The second comment is I commend Jeff for organizing and heading the herd of cats. I mean, he got every organization that does horses in this state, all the harness ones, the owners, the trainers, the Farm Bureau, under one umbrella to do this economic impact study. I just think it's incredible, and I think that shows that united we stand. And I would hope in the ongoing discussions for distribution of revenue and locations of casinos, if that comes to pass, that this group would continue to be in the forefront representing the interests of horsemen throughout the state of New York.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions on legislation? Okay, our contract with the Thoroughbred Breeders expires at the end of December. We need to discuss a new contract. I'll ask in no particular order, Tracy, Harry, and Jeff to comment.
Well, I guess I will start because Jeff came to me sometime this summer and he said, going forward, that he didn't want to do the advertising piece, which in last year's, when we did the contract, you recall that we were raising the amount to $300,000. He said to us and put in writing that he would be spending $85,000 of that on ads on online and print ads. So, because he wants to concentrate on public relations next year to help deal with the onslaught of critical reporting, not always responsible reporting, that tries to paint like thoroughbred racing in here in New York with quarter horse racing in New Mexico and other things like that. And you know, it was horrible press for good reason when there were breakdowns in New York. But anyway, so he wants to focus on public relations. So originally I thought that we could perhaps, you know, just cut the money back to $250,000. But because it looks like our budget picture is going to be basically the same next year as this, Gene recommended that we cut the amount to $215,000, which is, you know, basically that whole piece minus the $85,000 for ads. And Jeff was amenable to that.
Yeah. So, given that Tracy is taking print and online ads, and I was doing the same work with this $85,000, it only made logical business sense for Tracy to have control of this larger print and ad budget and to use it in her wheelhouse for what she was already doing versus doing the same exact thing for both. But it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So essentially what I'm doing is reduced our contract by $85,000 and gave it back to the funds and managed that. That's the only change with the contract that I was proposing. Again, we're actually going to get a smaller amount for next year if this goes through. And you know, continue to improve the things that we're doing on, doing all of the same promotional items that we're a part of.
Yeah, the contract, as Jeff said, is substantially the same as last contract. We'll cut the compensation back to $215,000. And we find it's the sole source. That's the important part, of course. Mm-hmm. They're the only outfit that can provide the services in the state of New York.
And it represents the majority of readers, which I think is most important.
Yes.
Let me just ask one question to Jeff. The controller's report that we referred to earlier in the meeting criticized the contract for not having an audit clause.
So here's my thoughts to that. One, I think it's completely ludicrous, that comment. I'm going to record and say that because our contract is very simple. Every quarter, we provide a full accounting of all of the dollars associated with the work that we're performing. And it comes to the fund. Tracy has access to that. This board has access to those numbers. At any point in time, this board and Tracy can simply say, Jeff, I have a question about this line item or this number. Can you give me some more information? Can you provide this type of, you know, I'd like to know more about it. And I've been here for 5 years and not once has there ever been a question about any line item or financial part of that. So I have a little bit of a heartburn with the fact that we need to do anything different. And this is what I'm proposing is to this board, is that going forward in the quarterly accounting that I provide, if there's ever a question about any of that, it's a simple business relationship. Mm-hmm. Jeff, can we discuss this? Can we address it?
So let me ask you this. Why couldn't you put in the contract, because one of the things the controller's office said is that if it's the remain a sole source contract, they thought there should be an audit clause. And what would prevent you from putting a clause in a contract saying that at any time a majority of the board can ask for an audit of the contract, of our board, can ask for an audit of the contract at the breeder's expense? Knowing that since you just said that no one's ever questioned it, it's not likely to happen.
Yeah. Jeff, I should add that the accounting you give me this year is much more detailed than it has been in the past, and that was a direct result of the criticism from OSC that when he gives me an accounting, it's, you know.
But they want to see language in the contract.
Well, let me stop this right there. I don't think by any means should this be at the breeder's expense to pay for an audit of the contract or we're arranging with the fund. But I have our counsel, Jim Town, who's here from Town and Ryan Partners. And they actually, in preparation for this meeting, I had them put together a few different options if the case was that the board wanted some of that language talking about, you know, questioning financials from NYTV. So why don't we look, why don't we actually look at this? But it's pretty simple. This states, this we could enter this into the contract, and it's fairly straightforward, is that the fund shall submit any questions or inquiries in writing regarding said accounting to NYTV within 30 days of receipt of the account. NYTV shall respond to such inquiry within 15 days. Upon request, NYTV shall provide fund with paid receipts, canceled checks, invoices, and the related services it provides under this agreement. If there's in any event the parties are not able to resolve the dispute related to the accounting, the parties shall submit a dispute to arbitration of the AAA to resolution with the cost to be shared equal by both parties.
That to me is pretty much an audit clause.
The intent was to make, I'm sorry, this is Jim Town. The intent was to make this open enough so that you feel comfortable with the process.
Right. That satisfies me. I don't know about board members or the controller. I can't speak for the controller, but
I'll defer to our counsel, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, I would have appreciated getting this.
Well, I mean, actually, as up until yesterday, there was, if we actually remember, the fund sat in this board meeting in August and said that we weren't going to do this. So,
yeah. But obviously, you put it together. So,
also, we just got this comment from the controller, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is just kind of understanding this literally happened yesterday. So,
okay.
Because I found out that this was
Well, it's the water under the bridge. So, I'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
That means we can't sign the contract today, right? Because I've got to add it to the contract.
Yeah.
Well, we could pass a resolution that would say that with negotiated language we approve.
Okay.
All right, so now procedurally we need two motions. One would be to give a sole source contract to NYTB, and then the approval of the contract between the Thoroughbred Breeders and the fund. So it's two separate votes by virtue of the fact that we have to abide by statute and the authority's budget office. So is there any further discussion yet, Dr. Wilmot?
So on the second motion that we're about to propose, would we have a clause that would say, upon review by counsel?
Yes. That's something similar to that.
Yes. So any other discussion? So I'd like to entertain a motion to have the New York Thoroughbred Breeders be a sole source vendor and authorize the fund to enter into a sole source agreement.
I'll make that motion.
Moved by Mr. McMahon. Is there a second? Dr. Wilmot. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, now we need a motion to accept the contract as presented with interpretation of language on an audit function to be finalized between councils, the fund, and the breeders.
So
is that language you're happy with, Kyle?
And that's at $215,000.
At $215,000, yes. Mm-hmm. Senator Nolan makes a motion, second by Mr. Graziano. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Can you note that I excuse me?
I'm sorry, yes. Mr. Canizzo has to abstain from this by virtue of his position.
I'd like to just comment on this thing that, if I may.
Sure.
As long as I've been on this board, which is a long time, the issue of advertising by the fund or by the breeders has always been contentious. And it's caused a lot of inefficiency, it's caused repetition, and it's caused bad feeling for the leaders. And I'm very glad that this thing is is finally put to bed, so to speak. I think that's a great move on Jeff's part, and I think that that'll work out very well in the future. I think that removes an issue which has been there a long time.
Yep.
And also, I mean, Jeff and I will still, we'll talk about, you know, what are we need to be pushing at this time of the year. At this time of the year, my ads promote taking your mayors to New York and breeding to New York stallions.
So it's all in one house now, and I think that's a good thing.
Okay, next item is a wordy one, but shouldn't be a complicated one. It's the approval of policies for the authority budget office and the Paris filing. The board needs to approve a bunch of policies to be submitted to the authority's budget office for next year. We've approved most of these in the past. Probably should do it in one motion, unless there's an objection. Are there any policies that would suggest we have a problem with or out of date or anything like that? I'll ask Tracy or Kyle.
No, there's only one new one, but I think you can vote on the old ones. I was considering asking for an update on the procurement policy, but because of the uncertainty of what's happening with the board going forward and who the new board members would be, I thought we could wait until early in the new year to look at procurement. Because I talked to somebody at the Office of General Services, and they said we may use OGS procurement, but we also, because we're a public benefit corporation, have the right to go outside that within our procurement guidelines. But I would like to have that opinion in writing from somebody at OGS.
Okay, so you think we can approve the policy with the contingency that
it could be updated, right? Yeah.
And what's the one you want to talk about separately? Is domestic
violence?
Well,
this is new. Apparently, this came about in 2008, but I didn't find out about it until this year.
Let's go over the ones we're going to approve so we can get some of them out of the way, because this is kind of ministerial. Okay, so there's procurement, lobbying, minority and women business enterprise contracting, investment policy, prompt payment policy, credit card policy, general policy of internal control policy, whistleblower policy, policy for domestic violence we're holding, workplace violence prevention policy, and policy and procedure for disposition of assets. I know that's a lot, but we've done all of these, I believe, individually before. And this is all as a result of the new authorities budget office and holding authorities to accountability. I know it's a pretty extensive list, but you've all heard about them individually at different board meetings, isn't it? So I'd like to make a motion that we approve all of them except for the domestic violence and workplace policy, which Tracy's going to explain more about. Can I have a motion to approve those unless someone has a question?
So moved.
Okay. Mr. Graziano, seconded by Senator Nolan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Very good. Now, I'll ask Tracy to talk about domestic violence in the workplace.
Well, it turns out that every agency, anybody that's part of the state, including authorities, should have a policy in place so that they can recognize the signs of domestic abuse that are showing up in the workplace. It can show up, you know, you can discern that it's happening if somebody has a repeated habit of coming to work late, if they have, you know, bruising, or they get a phone call and repeatedly excuse themselves from the office. So you take steps to say, you know, do you talk with them privately? Do you have a problem? Refer them to local local groups that help with domestic violence. There are some resources here in Saratoga County for the fellows in the downstate office at Belmont. There are also resources down there, so I've made them aware of them, given them phone numbers, let them know that I'm the liaison with the Office of Domestic Violence Prevention. And so I wrote up our policy. I sent it over to that department, and the policy has been approved, and now it awaits your approval.
Questions or comments? Again, this is every agency is doing this. Hearing none, can we have a motion to approve the domestic violence in the workplace policy? Moved by Mr. McMahon. Is there a second? Mr. Kelly, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, I'd like to also note that effective January 1st, 2013, Project Sunlight takes effect. I know Mr. Albertine is going to be subject to this, as well as us at the Racing and Wagering Board and all of you. Project Sunlight is an important component of the Public Integrity Reform Act of 2011, which was an important policy the governor got through the legislature. Under this law, state governmental entities will be required to cooperate with the Office of General Services and identify in a database developed by OGS all individuals, firms, or other entities other than state and local government agencies that appear before an entity on behalf of themselves or in a representative capacity on behalf of a client or customer for any varied specific purposes. In English, that means lobbying. This includes appearances related to procurement, rate-making, regulatory matters, judicial or quasi-judicial proceedings, adoption or repeal of a rule or regulation. In the coming weeks, the executive branch is putting together guidance on how this law will be applied and what appearances will be covered. You'll be updated, but suffice it to say that phone calls, lunches, that shouldn't be paid for by lobbyists, but lunches you have, rounds of golf, you're going to have to let people know, and it's going to be cross-reference with what lobbyists file. So, the times they are changing from when I first got to Albany in the 70s, and for the better, I think. Next item. I'd like to go into executive session so we can discuss management and personnel issues of the fund. Can I have a motion to go into executive session? Mr. Graziano, second by Mr. Tessaro. I'd ask that all leave the room except for the members of the fund, Kyle, Larry, and Rick Goodell.
So moved to that.
Yes.